Welcome to the Egyptian Streets podcast. I'm your host, Noron Morsi, writer and podcast producer at Egyptian Streets. Each week, we invite a notable Egyptian to talk with us as we explore the intersection between Egyptian identity and creative social change from an artistic, educational, or cultural perspective. Today, joining me as returning co-host is Farah Khairat. Hey Farah, I'm really excited to have you back.
Hi, me too. I love doing this.
So today we're hosting Felouka, hip-hop and rap artist based in New York from Egypt.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me on this bomb podcast.
Thank you for being here. Welcome. We're really excited to have you here. And I think I speak for both Farah and I when I say that we've been looking forward to this for a long time. And we're really excited to chat today.
Likewise, I'm such a big believer in like all the work that Egyptian Streets puts out. And I really feel like it's one of the last few like publications we have on just like really freedom of expression, just like updated, like nuanced perspectives on Egyptian culture. And, you know, to be featuring on this podcast is pretty lit. It feels pretty full circle and, you know, co-hosted by none other than my best friend. So I'm feeling really good. And
that's
like,
so cute.
I'm in the right place right now.
Best friend, by the way. It was actually my designated role over last summer when I was
official
in Egypt
title.
With Sora. I would just tag along to her things and just be like, yes, hi, I'm the best friend. Like, that was my entire role. It was really fun.
Yeah, no, that's like an official title. I was just gonna say, like, that's official part of somebody's team is like the best friend, you know.
I mean, yeah, I to me it kind of just felt like I was Lily to Hannah Montana, but that's okay.
That's amazing.
Oh my god,
just so fun,
dude.
I guess, like, Noron just introduced you, but we were wondering if you wanted to introduce yourself in your own words sort of thing. So how do you introduce yourself generally?
I like that. I try to introduce myself as, I really want to use the word multimedia artist. At this point in time, I go with Egyptian, New York-based artist, poet, storyteller, and soon-to-be director and multimedia artist. I really want to keep expanding. Like, hopefully that title and that introduction is something that's forever changing, because if it's not, then that's when I'm stagnant. That's when I feel like I've plateaued. So at this juncture, yeah, I'm a poet and a artist,
really
storyteller.
Cool. Yeah. No, I totally get that. Like, I think it makes sense that it's constantly changing. Obviously, I think that even if you just had one title, that you would still be extremely talented and, like, you know, that wouldn't make you any less of an artist. But yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
You're right, because titles are stupid anyways, so might as well change them all the time to fit whatever I'm doing in that moment.
That's
actually
interesting. Anyway, we're not going to get into professional identities and whatnot today.
Love it.
Yeah.
Abstractions, please.
Definitely. I wanted to ask, so let's focus on one of those titles at first, or the one that I guess you're most known for is the music, which I guess is a bigger umbrella. But I was wondering how you got started with it. I know that there was some poetry in the beginning, but I was curious from where that stemmed from, what age, from. Yeah.
I feel like definitely poetry was the start of everything for me. I've had multiple very inspiring English teachers that along the way have shown me what literature, language and literature can really do to not just yourself and your mind and your homeostasis, but also culture and just a larger scale of things. Like, really, language changes your whole life and the lives of the people that live it. Like, it's literally documentation of life. So once I kind of tapped into the power of language, I was like, I want to, you know, sharpen my pen. And writing just like took me that way. And I just been in love with writing. And yeah, I guess it hit a point where I was like, damn, I want to make these words really come out of the page. And that's, my brother is, you know, he's a producer himself. He's working on a lot of stuff on his own time all the time. And he kind of just put me on to his software, his equipment. He was like, this is a mic, you know, like speak the poetry onto the beat kind of thing. And I was like, damn, bro, this is amazing. So since then, it's been like, literally, I consider myself still writing poetry. I always try to find like poetic ways to convey different like emotions or feelings. And the writing is what inspires me more than anything. So that's kind of how I landed into music. And since then, I've been definitely more intrigued by, you know, learning different instruments and learning music itself, music theory. But at the heart of it, I'm still a writer. Like, I'm a pen and paper gal, not a sound as much.
Yeah. You've published a few poetry collections too, right?
I did. I kind of just like chapbooks, though. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't call them poetry books.
I mean,
it's like 50 pages max. Like, I don't know.
Two that are 50 pages long. So I'd say that's a decent collection.
For sure. No, it feels nice to just, I guess, acknowledge a feeling and like create something for it. That's how I feel like I really process something.
Yeah.
And those poetry chapbooks represented a lot of like the heartache and the angst that I was feeling when I first moved to New York. Mm. And I was just dealing with a lot and just dealing with that separation from my motherland and from a lover and from so much that poetry really saved me. And I was like, I want to kind of have a statue for it. And I guess that's a book in terms of poetry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, actually, since you just brought up New York, I wanted to ask you, this is one of my questions for you. What do you think the most difficult thing about living in New York is? Because obviously, like, you know, you didn't grow up there. Moving there at like what, the age of like 19 or something, like that would have been really difficult.
Mm-hmm. It surprisingly wasn't as difficult as like I guess I'd imagined or my parents had like told me it was going to be, because of like the kind of upbringing that me and my friends and like a lot of us had growing up, which was very westernized and, you know, just like to the max Western like assimilation in the motherland, which is really wild to wrap our heads around. And we're still trying to be like, but where does that place us? But yeah, so where it placed me was in New York without culture shock, to be honest. Like, I found my way pretty easy. And the difficulty, I think, is just staying like true to my roots, staying like clinging on to anything that reminds me of that tradition and that culture is hard out here. But it's not impossible. And that's just my attempt through music and through the art, is to kind of just keep that connection going.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And also, it's mad expensive. That's a very big difficulty living in New York City.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I get you about like not really having culture shock when you go to new places. You're like, okay, can't.
No, you know.
Yeah.
But I've actually I'm trying to coin this new term called culture buzz, which is like not so much of a shock. Yani khalas, you know about these things and how different the ideals are and stuff, but it still does like, you know, irk you a little.
Yeah.
So you're like, that's culture buzz.
Oh, duh. Because you know when like you go out to a restaurant with like your white friends and like nobody offers to pay, like that's shocking. That was a shock to me. That's still okay. I don't even mind splitting your own, like paying your own part, that's fine. But you know what, because I work at a restaurant, there are grown adults like in their 40s, 50s. They obviously live in a rich area because this area is a rich area, and they have full-time jobs, and you know what, they split by the dollar. Like they'll be like, oh, I got the red wine and the steak. And then the other person's like, oh, but I didn't get a wine, so I'll pay $8. I'm like, what is wrong with you? That's embarrassing.
Wild.
Anyway.
No, it is. It's true. And like, it'll be moments like that where it'll be like, damn, like, I really love being Egyptian, like, for that reason. That I don't really have these struggles. It's just like, hey, this one's on me. Next lunch, which we now will have to have, you will get for me, you know? Like, it just prolongs the friendship and the connection, which is like...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, definitely, like, seems like the way to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I want to counter Farah's question, because I'm someone who, like, I love Egypt, but I am a fan of New York, and, like, the few times I've been there, it did... like connect with me, and it does with you, I can see. So I want to ask you, what's your favorite thing about living in New York?
Oh, damn. I think definitely the mobility of it, like living in the city is just like a train hop away from different borough, which is a whole different experience. I can hop on the train and be in Coney Island by the beach also in like 40 minutes. And for me, just that kind of navigation is so liberating and so freeing. And it's something that I didn't experience back home. Yeah, there's public transportation, and I'd be riding the metro, like, you know what's up, but but it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I don't know. There's no, like, women's car kind of thing just to protect my ass. I don't have to worry about, like, you know, kind of, like, safety measures as much.
Mm.
Also, just, you know, like, the art that speaks to you on the train and stuff, which I see also on the metro, actually, in Cairo, come to think of it. There's hella stories, hella art on that, on those trains with the merchants and the things they sell. Yeah, and if you But yeah, I think the mobility is really what gets me going about the city, for sure.
That's super access relatable. I totally relate to that. It's also my favorite thing about living in Melbourne is just like public transport. Mm. And like, obviously there's other things, but just being able to get around, like, especially as like a woman in Egypt, is so difficult. It's really, really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. And it feeds into like everything else in life, you know. I feel like mobility is just the secret. Like you need to get around to get jobs, to get money. Mm. You need to get around to make connections, to meet new people, to have these experiences. Like, we just need to be able to move.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's sort of like the divide between the public and like the private sphere sort of thing. Like, women don't really have as much ownership over the public space, because I mean, like, the public space wasn't really built for them either. You know what I mean? Like, it's physically like an obstacle for them. Yeah.
No, it's so true. I think about that a lot when I'm back home versus when I'm here. And then I try really hard when I'm back home to like kind of eradicate that confine and be like, what's the most that I can push my mobility? All right, I have a rukhsa, I have a license, let me drive, let me be extra, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, let's try and do these things. And beyond just the physical mobility, like the mental mobility of like, I had planned to take this time today and work on this thing that I really wanted to do, regardless of the 15 other commitments that like my family might want me to get to, or my somebody needs me to be at this birthday, because you know if I miss it they're gonna be like it's things like that where it's like, no, think motion, think moving, you're not stagnant, you're not static, keep moving, keep like, just movement is super important to me, I think.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, actually, because so my question for you now is, what did you do with the pandemic? Because I guess the pandemic really restricted moving. Like, how did that affect you? Oh, why am I asking as if I don't know? Anyway, how did that affect you?
Like, I want to know.
Yeah, for Nuran, for the listeners.
For Nuran.
How do you think that affected you mentally, but also in terms of your career and figuring out what you want to do and stuff? Because you like graduated, right? Like, right as this pandemic was hitting. Yeah,
literally as it was unfolding. It was such a strange but beautiful time. Like, I felt like I was cocooned, but I told myself that I wasn't going to go into the cocoon without any blueprints or without any plans. So as things were crumbling down, I was like, what's the album about? As things are shutting down, I'm like, do I have everything I need to record? Like, I know this shit is coming, and I'm like, I need to have everything in my little like cocoon so that I'm ready for this. And I was, and I met some really cool people right before pandemic hit, including my current like partner and sound engineer and like a big producer on my team, who like, we just spent mad hours when everything was shut down, kind of just cranking out beats and making music. And for me, that was really what saved me. Like, the fact that I could still find that movement with new music and new sounds and new hobbies. Yo, I started cooking. I was never cooking before. I have hula hooping times.
Hula hooping.
I just really tried to.
I didn't know you hula hooped.
Yeah, hula hooping for sure. I got a hoop and I just be doing it in the living room. Just any kind of outlet for my brain and for my spirit. And I just tried to internalize the movement as much as possible. And I really think it worked. It definitely gets weird. Like, it still today gets weird that like I'm at home like most hours of the day. Like that meme that's like, time for my little walk just to feel something. Like, that's OD.
Yeah.
That's OD what it is. But there's no shame about it, because like, I just feel like the unity in everybody experiencing something so wild as a global pandemic, it's enough to really comfort me and be like, as wild and trash as I feel, I know a lot of people in this world are feeling this right now. So cheers to us. Like, I'm here for that.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, so that's what definitely like gave me patience throughout the pandemic.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I'm glad you had the patience and the motivation to do those things. Personally, I was miserable, but good for you and your cocoon and your blueprint. It took me a minute.
It was still trash.
That's true. It took me a minute to understand your cocoon blueprint metaphor. But yeah, what, can you explain it to me? Because I'm still... Why are there blueprints in a cocoon?
I guess I just meant like I was bringing the blueprints for my plans and my concept and my work into the cocoon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes
not
sense.
Making a blueprint of the cocoon. Although that's next level. That's next level, and I want to do that.
Design the cocoon.
It's a deep metaphor.
Yeah, no, like giving me mad ideas.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't misunderstanding that. That's fine.
And you got it. And like, did you get, not like, this is a weird question to ask, but did you get like music work done in that cocoon? I think you did, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all of Dream 23 was recorded during pandemic times and fully mixed and mastered during pandemic. And we put it out in August in the middle of like everybody being like, nobody's releasing music right now. We can't really release music. I was like, dude, we need music for the times that everybody's kind of just shook and like not knowing what to do. So I make music for people to jam to in their rooms alone. And if they're, you know, going on that silly little walk just to feel something, here's a song for that. Like, that's for so real, cute. Yo. Like, why would we stop?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. That's so sweet. You also did, like, I think you did, like, maybe one or two live shows, like, outdoor ones. Is that...
I did. Yo, we tried everything. Like, we went, I was post up at this restaurant that I live right on top of. This French restaurant was like, Feluca, come jam for the people. And I was like, you know what? I was like, if things were back to normal, I would say never. But you know what? Yalla. So yeah, I'd be post up on the curb while cars are coming and splashing all over our equipment for sure. Oh, we done that. We done parking lots. We done all sorts of things, but like I tried that flex for like a little bit. And then even then I was like, okay, like I need to kind of just place my art where like the most appropriate place for it is. And right now that's just online. Yeah. That's the only way I can communicate and engage with my listeners and with people that really like believe in the movement and stuff is just online.
Yeah.
So I've been, you know, I've been cranking out as many like live shows and live things as possible. I've been doing just like things online that definitely make me feel like a cyborg, but yo, this is the live experience right now.
Is it weird like being on live and it's like you're just like talking to these little like names? It's like, who are you?
Oh my god, literally I'm talking to heart emojis half the time is the way I think about it, and I'm like, that's like really weird, but it's also just like, I guess that's life right now, you know?
Yeah.
Talking to yourself vis-a-vis not yourself vis-a-vis thousands of people, like, so strange.
It's so strange because when you think so about strange. Isn't it weird how much we see our own reflections these days, like Zoom calls, like video calls, things like that. It's just so like, oh, that's me all the damn time, like
that's so true. Strange. It is a weird time, honestly, but it's made me a lot more reflective, like, and a lot of people I think are feeling this way. Is like we're all kind of tapped in words. We're very well aware of our own flaws. I feel I'm aware of my flaws since pandemic, because I just had more time to sit with myself and be like, what's going on and what's not going on.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, definitely. The introspection the pandemic gave us was a lot. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Okay, so I have a question for you. And this question I actually do not know the answer to. So if you had to only if you had to get rid of all your tracks and just keep one, what would it be?
Oh my god, what the hell?
Sorry. Fine, what's your favorite track? I could have just said that.
Oh my god, she's like, I'm gonna erase your entire discography.
Yeah, exactly.
All your work just is gone. Keeping one. Exactly. I'm like, okay. I guess I would keep and that's a good like posed question, just because like if I were to have one thing that was just left to my name, I guess I would keep it hurts me to say something wrong. I would say it changes, honestly. Okay. Right now, 22 plus one, I feel, just because like it has a lot of the concepts that I work with all the time. It has the vision of the plus one. That plus one concept is super important to me. Not bring a plus one, but like always account for a plus one in your mind of ideas, of possibilities, of shit not working out, of something coming to you more than you expected. Just keep an eye out for that, you know, plus one of reality.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense, huh? Also, that song is a vibe, actually, so I can see why you'd keep it. I feel like I limited you too much. I feel like I should have asked you on each album, which one would you keep?
It's something that made a little more sense. She's like, all your tracks are gone and you have one left. Off of Citadel, because I was going to say off of Citadel, I would keep POV, I think, because again, it taps into the main thing that I talk about, which is perspective, the plus one philosophy. Like, I really love philosophy and I love just like working with different abstractions and different concepts. I love concept work.
Mm.
So anything like that, I would like to keep. Hopefully I don't erase. Yeah.
Okay. No. Yeah. Right. Well, there's no need for you to erase them. I was just curious. You right. Know?
Yeah. Thank God.
Thank God.
Speaking of your music, I'm really curious about when you decided to infuse the English and the Arabic in all in your songs, because I don't think anyone really does that in the way that you do, and I really like it. So,
thanks. I feel like I'm hearing a lot more rappers nowadays do that, which is really cool. Of the mix of Arabic and English, but in the beginning, it was never a decision. It was never an active decision to do that. I was like, what's the most like, you know, fun, authentic way I can hop on this track? And that was Idilo verse Arabi. And then right after it is a hook in English. And yeah, because I'm inspired by like, by both cultures for sure, by both worlds. So it came very naturally to me. Eyes, Haga.
تكلمي مين?
طب ما تسأل.
Malik, hi, Malik. Come say hi to the listeners.
He is the producer who started the music also.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Malik, a.k.a. MMKNB, on the lookout for his symphonies and also his electronic music debuting shortly.
Malik, what's your what's your favorite track that you've produced with Soto?
What's your favorite track that you've produced with me?
Oh, that's a good question. Right now, it's... Give It All. It's unreleased.
Ooh.
But it's coming up soon, and I'm very excited for it.
I'm really excited for that, too.
I think I sent you that demo
you
file.
Did.
It's like, if I give it all up to you. Yeah, I'm excited, really for, excited that for that joint. It's going to be sweet.
Yeah, that's super exciting.
Thanks, bro. You're the best.
Thanks, Malik.
Keep it on the wavelength.
That was a cute little interruption.
I love that we get like a sneak peek, a live sneak peek, exclusive 100%. On the
podcast. Yes, literally. Just for you.
Yeah, so you were talking about English and Arabic and integrating it into songs and stuff.
I mean, it's just simply that, yeah, this is how I think a lot of the times is ma'soom or split, so to speak. And so to stay authentic to my cultural identity, which is multifaceted, I have to rap and sing like that.
Yeah.
I've put out full tracks in English. I'm working on full tracks in Arabic. I'm trying to learn French also. I really like French rap, so I'm trying to do what I can to elevate always. Yeah.
No, that's really cool. And I remember your Arabic English identity split has been a thing since since TEDx, since you actually might have met Nuron, because I remember you performed a spoken word thing about. I just forgot what it was called specifically.
My native tongue. Yes.
I don't know why. Yeah, I'm like, I was like, should I bring it up? Is she gonna kill me? Like,
oh my god, nah. Like, it's I came across that poem like a few days ago or something, and I'm just like, it seems like I had a lot of passion to put somewhere, and I was just really like trying to put it somewhere. And I guess that was a really good outlet. Honestly, come to think of it, I'm glad they had those TEDx like youth events, because like, you know, a girl could feel like she's special and she's sophisticated on stage talking smack about a topic that was far, you know, far too vast for me to even fathom like getting into. And now it's my life's work, is just apologizing to the Arabic language on not being closer and trying to be closer and trying to appreciate the Arabic language and the Egyptian culture in a way that I guess I was too blinded to do when I was growing up, because it didn't seem attractive or something. So now that I'm older and I'm like, you know, my brain is not a youthful sponge ready to absorb everything like it was when I was little. I'm like, damn.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And do you feel like you've reached the point where like you've sort of consolidated the two aspects, like the two languages?
What do you mean consolidated?
Like, do you feel like you don't have that split as much anymore? Like, do you feel like you are more grounded in terms of like your cultural identity? And, you know, like, do you still feel like you have to apologize to the Arabic language?
No, but you know, it's funny because like it's super non-linear, as with like any like human process, I guess. Like, there's never just one emotion of like, I think this must be the place of stability and certainty in my identity.
Yeah.
It's never like that. It's like comes and goes. And And there are moments where I'm like, I'll just literally get like comments or DMs from people of like, you know, like متنسينش في القاهرة طب يعني تراك بالعربي تراك معمول توف لو سمحت يا فلوك. And it's just stuff like that. That's like, for me, I'm like, damn, like, is my people hurting? Like, am I hurt? Like, not am I hurting them by not being as openly Egyptian as they want me to be, but kind of like, I don't know, man. It's like, who am I making this for? And is it enough? And these questions are always on my mind. But at the end of the day, I can only really create for myself.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
And for what heals me, you know, because I have all these other things on my mind about the mobility, the physical mobility, the mental. And like, I can't really put all that aside to be like, all right, let me tap in and make sure they know I'm still like as Egyptian as they think I am or whatever. Like, you just got to believe, homie. I'm from the motherland. I've been from the motherland. Yani mosri abuya mosri, but I don't have to prove that to anybody in a track, you know?
No, bitch, you're so
they're gonna make
cringe.
Me say that on the podcast. I'll say it. Jeez. Right. I mean, I don't know if there's anything more to really say about that. Like, you asked me, Farah, if I feel like I've reached a point of like consolidating like these two aspects of myself, and it's just a continuous process. Because I'm constantly shook at the progress that I guess I didn't make when I'm triggered by something or when I'm, you know, feel like I'm not enough of something. I'm like, Ida, we're really still kind of figuring this out, huh? And you know what? That's just what it is being human. And if I had it all figured out and it was easy breezy, then I don't know, I'd be a bot or something, but not human for sure.
Yeah.
And people that act like they've got it figured out are faking it, because we're all just, yeah, we're all constantly just puzzled.
No, that makes complete sense. And also like, you're right, because like healing and growth neither are like linear, you know, like it's just ups and downs sort of thing.
Exactly.
But like in like a general up sort of scale.
For sure. We would hope.
Yeah,
we would
that,
hope.
That's what it should look like, you know, and I feel like definitely I've seen so much growth in you as like an artist and as a person, you know, since we were 15, I guess.
You know, I was just talking, this is a little off topic maybe, but like, what is the topic? You know, it's just truth right now. I was asked recently by my friend Tanya, like, if I feel like I've met people in a past life, if that's really a concept that I believe in or not. And I wholeheartedly do. Like, the first instance that I had in my life that proved to me that like souls have met before, and this might not be the first time around on this like narrative, on this terrain, was meeting you, Farah, because I feel like, you know, literally in like senior year or like junior year, I meet like my best friend who like our whole lives like just like so intertwined, so similar, same like upbringing, same family and everything. And now when we're thousands of miles away and I feel like you're still going through the same things that I'd be going through, and all it takes is like a call to like confirm that, and I'm like, damn,
yeah,
spirits can be really, really, you know, like united in that way.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, that's me too, for sure. Like, I definitely think you're my soulmate. Except, you know, my soulmate would know that I actually left school in senior year, so we actually met.
I did
freshman year.
Senior year, junior year,
freshman. Any way to high school, you know,
all labels.
You know,
let alone labels, they don't matter.
Yeah, just ignore the 4-year difference. Damn.
It's whatever. Depth over distance, we know that could be 4 years, but I'm telling you here, it felt like an eternity. You're really gonna come tell me I messed up the dates?
No, yeah. Okay. Yeah. No.
Thanks.
But we have been friends for a long time, and because of that, I wanted to ask you. This is my question for you. So you're not actually that off topic. What advice would you give to us at 15 years old?
Oh my God, that's so beautiful. It took me back right now to Layla's cousin's wedding, just sitting there talking smack about boys and drama. I would tell us that all our feelings are 100% valid, and I would tell us that be the feminist in the room, even if people give you trash for it and call you out for it, and your own teacher doesn't stand by you and goes like, well, you know, feminist is a polluted term. Like, say the word, yo. Why is people scared? Like, that whole trajectory and like being like shamed and shunned on for being outspoken about what you believe in. That's not a thing for me anymore. And I'm encouraging all young girls to speak out and to be openly curious about life and themselves and everything. Be as loud and open and fully yourself in the open as you want. And I know that we did that before it was popular. So I would tell us to just go do that again. That's all I would do.
Yeah. No, I 100% with you on that.
I love that.
Hold on. Is there anything you would tell your 15-year-old self?
I would probably say...
Sorry, I put you on the spot.
packed question. I think I would just say to like start not caring about what people think way earlier, and like just be myself. And like, it sounds super cliche, and that's what everyone says, but there's a reason for that.
There is. No, there really is. I think it's because as a kid, also growing up in this society where it just like, there's so many confines and just like examples of conformity shoved into our face on just media that we engage with. Pop culture is super, super limiting.
Absolutely.
And it was even more limiting when we were growing up and we didn't see as much diversity in pop culture. Uh-huh. And thankfully that's changing. But as a kid, for sure, we need all the validation we can get to just be like, kid, you're doing fine just as you are. You know, don't worry about your sideburns and try to bleach them. People are going to make fun of you anyway.
You did a bad job. It was a really bad bleach, honestly.
I did a really... Hey, listen. You made it worse. The fact that I had to bleach my sideburns to make myself feel okay at the school. I don't want to have to do that. I don't want my daughters to have to do that. No. I'm sorry. I'm saying this
we
now.
We also don't want them to
do
go.
Not call me Jesus on the track.
Oh my God. That was such a funny... I'm sorry.
There's just like so many other moments of things like that, you know, stuffing your bra, doing all that trash where it's like, don't, you know, like, no, I don't want any kids to be doing that. Like, we just got to work on making everybody feel like they are more than enough and just beautiful inside out. That's what I would tell us.
That's very sweet.
I love that.
Very cute.
Very wholesome. And like, speaking of high school and basically your time in Egypt, I know I think you're there from earlier than that, but you talk a lot about it as the motherland, and like you have a strong connection to Egypt despite living abroad. And I think everyone who lives abroad at some point in their life has a very different relationship with their home country than they do when they live there. Usually
definitely
kind of a stronger relationship. So how do you define that relationship, or like what are the, like, we talked about this earlier, but the things you miss, but in more, I guess, practical terms, when you think about Egypt, how do you feel? Because it's very complicated.
It's so complicated, yo. Like, now, I mean, when I think about it, I'm associating it with a lot of warmth and with mahabba wa rahma, concepts and values that I really, really believe are so, like, esoteric to our culture. And I don't see that in New York, and I don't see that in the UK. Like, I see it in the, you know, in the little pockets of that culture that I find out here, which is like my Arab homies, like my crew in London, like same thing. But for the most part, that's what I think of, is just like the values instilled in people and living for that community. It's just so beautiful. It's so beyond. It's like, Anna, what the haga? And you're like, I'm here for you, Anna. Anaya litnit, take my eyes, both of them. Like, that kind of sacrifice is so beautiful.
That's so cute.
Yeah. I think it's things like that.
Yeah, that's super sweet. And I think a lot of people relate to that idea of like the warmth sort of thing, even if like, they actually not hate, but there's a lot of things about Egypt that make it really difficult for them to move back or go back. There's still this like sense of warmth and like home that's, I guess, connected to it, even if,
The
negatives.
No,
anyway.
Now I'm like tempted to like kind of teeter into that comment. Like, you were about to say something and you were like, despite you know what, never mind, like,
you know, the failing job market, the sexism, the daily obstacles to just living a normal work-life balance,
patriarchy,
the homophobia. Anyway,
but you know what, but there's warmth.
There's warmth. The warmth just overrides that stuff.
No, and that's the thing, is like, definitely not, like, I'm saying that as a sarcastic comment, like, it's not to override anything, but it's crazy that like, despite all of that, what my mind races to is that feeling of kind of being hugged despite the chaos.
I relate to that.
Like, there's like a whole city kind of falling around me, and like my mom is hugging me and she's like, and I'm like, okay, yay, you know. And it's like that kind of calm in the chaos is very Cairo to me, and it's very New York to me too, like just finding some sanity amidst the chaos that is breaking down around you.
Yeah,
like that's like something I've internalized. Owie, owie, owie.
No, that's very sweet. And also your mom makes great food, so I can see why you would like just.
But it's also just like Egyptian mothers in general that very just want to love you, love you, love you. And like they sometimes don't even know how because of their own setbacks and their own, you know, twisted upbringing. And so they pass on and they project so much of it. But at the root of it, like قلب الأم بجد الأم المصرية يعني, that's just something incomparable.
Yeah. What was that?
I love that visual of a city breaking down around you, but you're hugging your mom and she's offering roses really of Lebanon. Like, dude, I can just see that.
No, someone needs to draw that, actually. I can see that for sure.
Ooh, I should direct that for the next visual, like music video. We need to have something like that.
That's
in
super
it for
cute.
Sure. Oh, I'll be directing this stuff now, so this is a good
Look
idea.
At you.
Thank you,
going
guys.
Up the ranks. So proud of you. That's really cool.
I feel like reclaiming your art is like the new 2021 thing, like for all like women artists everywhere and artists in general, honestly, like F your gender, like just rise up and claim your art kind of thing. Like I have all the ideas for my visuals. I kind of just sat with myself for a second like a few weeks ago and I was like, why am I not directing these? Like I have the means and I have the ideas. Let me just do that. Why are people not? Why are we waiting around for somebody to like produce that music? Go and learn how to use the software and produce that music for yourself.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think also because I feel like that industry is very male dominant. As a, I don't want to make this about you being an Egyptian woman.
Oh my
woman.
God, say it.
So what is your...
La Samarti, Egyptian female.
Egyptian female rapper.
Is the oh my God. I'm like, you know, I swear, next time I'm in an interview like that, I will OD, like, especially if it's a man, but I want to just be like, you tell, how's it being a Norwegian male doctor? A male doctor. There's not many.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That must be crazy.
It must be super frustrating to get that question all the damn time. And I'm not going to ask you that, but I am very curious about what your thoughts are on the Egyptian rap industry, especially since it's very male dominated. And we like, you experienced that firsthand, you know, like we saw that and we saw a lot of like, I'm not going to, you know, come out here and like shit on these men, but a lot of arrogance there, you know, there's a lot of arrogance for making really mediocre stuff and yet they get more recognition. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Damn, I know exactly who she's talking about. No, but you know, like, thank you for, I feel like we've never really voiced those words and I just want to like snap to that. Because men getting a lot of praise for mediocre work is a running theme in Middle Eastern society. And it's a running theme in like most societies, really. And I'm really tired of it. And thank you for saying that. And my thoughts on the Egyptian rap scene are that, yes, it's explosive. It's dynamic. It's happening. There's a lot of attention being drawn to it. Brands are interested. Freaking huge ass companies are interested in rappers now. And that's really, really great to see because they are the forefront of this culture. And that's just musicians in general, not just like rappers, just like people that make art. Artists are definitely the gatekeepers of culture. And so having that on them on that pedestal and having that Ittisalat ad feature an Egyptian female rapper is dope to see. It's freaking great. And I love the work that Pity and Zina Shezli and people like them are doing because these women are just, you know, being themselves in the limelight, doing what they do. And even if it doesn't sound like my music, like, or sound like what I listen to, I support it 100% and I love what they do. In Namaba, the music that I'm hearing from, like, you know, Egyptian, like, male rappers, like, yeah, some of it's really good. A lot of it, like you said, is just plain clout.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, banking on a lot of people are going to, like, swallow your music just, like, without even thinking of it because you are who you are.
Yeah.
And it's also the god complex that Middle Eastern societies have where we make icons out of our artists and we like stop seeing them as humans, so they don't really have room to f up, they don't have room to drop a mediocre track. It's just straight like, you are my god, you know. And that's a little dangerous, I think, but for the most part, yo, like, what can I say, man? I'm happy to see people rising to the top. I think anybody who's made it, I have respect for, mad respect for, just because they put in the grind and the effort and they're dedicated enough to do it. So I respect and I appreciate everybody in the industry. And I'm really happy to see where this is going, yo, for better or for worse, for trash music or mediocre, whatever it is. Like, let's be a culture that's got mediocre and amazing and trash music, just everything. Let's have it all.
That's true.
The more, the merrier. Yeah.
Facts.
Oh, well, that was a great response. I have no follow-up questions.
Love that. This is so fire, guys.
Oh, thanks. Noron, thank you.
I really enjoyed this, and I think we've said a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, and like the discussion has been everything I expected and more. So thank you so much, Feluca, and thank you, Farah.
Thank you.
Thank you guys getting me fired up right before I make some dinner about all these big cultural tropes and problems that I'm having. But you know what? It's also like I was gonna make some ravioli, but I don't know if we have any.
No, go make some veggie wraps.
I might go to the
store
and get some. Veggie wraps, you know, that's all I've been on. I love. Yeah. But thank you for these very stimulating and thought-provoking questions, guys. Like, it makes my day to really sit and, like, talk about these things with you guys, because I'm not asked about these kinds of, like, deep topics by some of, like, Western media outlets, because they really just focus on these titles that we dismissed in the beginning of this podcast. The first thing we did was, like, F all these titles.
Yeah.
And what most people focus on still is being Egyptian and being female in this industry. And I'm so much more than that. So thanks for asking me about the more than
that. Yeah, well, duh. Because, like, I always found that stuff really limiting. Like, especially if you are a person of color in a different country, like, that, like, your art only gets to be that. You know what I mean? It only gets to be...
Exactly.
Like, that's Egyptian art. That's Egyptian music. Like, it doesn't just get to be
world music.
Yeah, it just doesn't get to just be your music. You know what I mean? As well. Like, it's.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm grateful to be changing that, baby steps, one step at a time. And it's conversations like these that make me feel like that work is really being recognized and like we're elevating somewhere mad different with these cultural topics and with Egyptian identity in general. Yo, like, this thing is nuanced. This thing is alive and breathing. And
yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. Go enjoy your dinner.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Thank you, Egyptian Streets. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you, Feluca.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much to Feluca for joining us today, and to my wonderful co-host Farah Khairat.
Thank you, Nora. Thank you, Noron, for having me. It was really, really fun, actually. I thought it was going to be a bit weird, especially because, like, you know, we're best friends. Like, I was like, how am I going to do this? But it worked out really well, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I really appreciate you having me, so thank you.
Yeah, and I think you guys being best friends added a lot to the podcast. I felt like we're getting an inside look to Feluca's life and Feluca's... Like, what led her to be the Feluca that we know today as an awesome, like, musician and rapper and everything. So, again, thank you so much for being here. And I hope we get to do another podcast together.
Hopefully. Great.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening to the Egyptian Streets podcast.
Egyptian Streets is a podcast produced for the independent online publication at EgyptianStreets.com. The show is edited and produced by Noron Morsi. Production support from the Egyptian Streets team. Our theme music is The Zeppelin by Blue Dot Sessions. Tune in to the Egyptian Streets podcast every other Sunday, and don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. I'm Noron Morsi.